Judges chapter 6, verses 1 through 6 is our text this evening. Judges chapter 6, verses 1 through 6. The children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. The hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. And so it was that when Israel had sown, that the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites and the children of the east, even they came up against them. And they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth till thou come unto Gaza, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ass, nor ox nor ass. For they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude, for both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of the Lord, children of Israel, cried to the Lord. For 7 years, Israel was victimized by the Midianites. Israel's crops were destroyed, their livestock was confiscated, and the people were forced to seek refuge in the dens and caves of the mountains. During this difficult period, the angel of the Lord appeared unto Gideon. Judges chapter 6, verses 12 and 13. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him, and said unto him, The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, then why is all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us, and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. This very question is what many are asking today. Many are asking, if God is with us, why did my child have to die from cancer? Why was my wife killed in a car wreck? Why was my child molested? These and 1,000 similar questions could be asked. These questions grip the human heart, and thousands cry for some sort of an answer. The problem is here stated. With many people, the great obstacle to belief in God is the problem of evil and suffering. Many sincere people agonize greatly in an effort to resolve this problem in their minds. Thus, many assume that there cannot be a loving God, such as the Bible indicates. The problem is not a new one. It was set forth by the Greek philosopher Epicurus more than 2,000 years ago. Epicurus argued, If God wishes to prevent evil, but cannot, he is all-powerful, and therefore not God. If God has the power to prevent evil, but does not, he is not all-good, and therefore not God. If God has both the power and the desire to prevent evil, why is there evil, pain, and suffering in the world? The fallacy of this argument, of course, is the assumption that no good purpose can be served by the allowance of evil and suffering in the world. No man should be so bold as to think that he can completely understand everything about the problem of suffering. Notice with me, if you will, Romans chapter 11, verse 33. Romans chapter 11, verse 33. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments, and his ways past finding out. You may find yourself with an opinion that it's negative toward God. But we all need to remember that there are others with deeper knowledge than we have, that have experienced more of God than we have. What did the Apostle Paul, who was working for Jesus for many, many years as he spread the gospel throughout the Roman Empire. Oh, the depth of the riches, This is what Paul's opinion was of the subject of God and his goodness. Deuteronomy 29, verse 29, allows us to come to the conclusion that there's some things we just don't know. The secret things belong to who? The secret things belong to God. Who better to hold on to secrets than the Maker? God has revealed to us what we need to know. We would like to know a lot more sometimes, but could we handle it? Would we be distracted by extraneous things? God has given us what we need, probably not more than we would like. The things we would like to know but can't, we must accept by faith, knowing that God always does that which is right. In Genesis chapter 18 and verse 25, just after the visit of Jehovah God and angels to the house of Genesis, the Lord says this, Genesis 18, verse 25. Actually, Abraham says this. Genesis chapter 18, verse 25. He says, when proposed with the fact that Sodom and Gomorrah are going to be destroyed, and his nephew is there with his family, shall not the God of all the earth do right? Genesis chapter 18, verse 25 reads precisely, that be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked, that be far from thee. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Yes, the judge of all the earth shall do right, but he knows what is right. That is the standard. What God says is what is right. It cannot be false. It cannot be untrue. By definition, it needs no answer. Of course, God will do what is right. Sometimes it doesn't feel that way, but it's not about feeling. It's about truth and right. God gives us what we need. The problem addressed. First of all, it should be noted that when a person raises the question of evil, he is inadvertently appealing to some universal system of justice, which evil alleges violates. But if there's no God, there's no universal system of rightness. It's all opinion. You can say, I like cats. Somebody else can say, I don't like cats. And they're both right. You can say, that roach should live. Another person say, no, that roach has got to go. Some may have snakes on their place. My grandmother, she had on each side of her house a hole hanging on the fence. You know what her idea with regard to snakes was. They got to go. They weren't going to stay. If she saw them, that was the end. The whole would get it done. And so it is. If there is no God, there is no universal system of justice. It's all your opinion. Someone may say, baby seals need to stay. Others say, nope, baby seals can go. And it's just opinion. If there is no God, there is no universal system of rightness. How could there be any such thing as evil then? Let atheism, therefore, define for us what that standard by which certain things are judged to be evil. God, who is love, expresses his love by giving us the freedom to choose. We have freedom, freedom to choose. We are not automatons. We do not do something simply because God has programmed us to do it. No, we make decisions. We look at evidence. And we look at sensory data, and we come within ourselves and say, I like this, or I don't like that. God inserts his word to it and says, this is good and right. And we make a decision whether we're going to follow God or whether we're not. God has given us freedom of choice. Joshua 24, verse 15. Joshua 24 and verse 15. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom ye will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the God of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. There's a choice to be made. A choice to be made today as there was then. Who are you going to serve today? People are more likely to say, I'm going to serve myself than to serve some God. They say themselves, but God says, He is the one to be served. Who are you going to serve? What does it matter in the end? Well, God offers salvation, and man cannot save himself. So we must decide, what are we going to do? And Joshua decided, as he had so many decades before, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Make a choice. Turn with me to John 7, verse 17. John 7, verse 17. If any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself. You have a choice. A choice whether to do his will or not. Then Revelation 22, verse 17. Revelation 22, verse 17. You're there at the end of the book of Revelation, and you see all that's been said, and a choice being given whether to overcome or whether to not, to serve yourself or to serve the Most High God. Revelation 22, verse 17 reads, And the Spirit and the Bride say, Come. And let him that heareth say, Come. And whosoever will, let him take the water of life freely. Whosoever will, we have a choice. That choice causes us to make mistakes sometimes. God has not slavishly programmed us without free will. Where freedom of choice is permitted, there is certainly the possibility that man will make the wrong choices. There is good and right, and there is that which is evil and wrong. We have a choice to make. Wrong choices must entail some adverse consequences. It means if you lie to mom and dad, you get a spanking. Remember that from your childhood. Things went wrong, and you made a choice. Am I going to tell mom and dad the truth, or am I going to lie? It might seem good to lie, but parents have a way of finding out things. My mom had spies everywhere. If you had done something wrong, mom had already likely gotten the call before you got home. And she was warming up that belt if it was bad enough. That's the way it was. Think about this. If all actions or choices, both good and bad, produced exactly the same effect, how would one ever learn to choose the good and reject the bad? Now, there are consequences when you do that which is bad. You may not get caught, but sometime you will. Eventually, it all comes out. It's clear, therefore, that finite beings, that's us, with personal willpower, must be allowed to suffer the consequences of their wrong choices if they are to learn that the good is to be valued over the bad. Think about this. You know that there are children born with the ability or the lack of ability to feel pain. It's a bad thing. They don't learn to stay away from the fire. Because they can't feel the burn. They don't learn to stay away from the stove or harsh chemicals or anything like that. They don't learn like the rest of us do. When you put up your hand against the fire, it starts to cook your skin. You pull away from it and are safe. Some people don't have that ability. And so they don't learn to pull away from it. Sometimes it causes them to be destroyed because of it. Because they haven't learned those basic lessons that the rest of us have. We must suffer some adverse consequences if we are to learn things. If we ever learn to be a decent human being, then when we use bad language towards someone, If someone doesn't call us on it, if we don't get in trouble, then we never learn anything else. We never learn what is proper, good, and right. If we never feel the sting of our bad choices. In light of this, let us consider several types of suffering in the world. There are personal wrong choices. We frequently bring suffering upon ourselves because of the bad decisions that we make. Go back to Judges chapter 6 and verse 1. Judges chapter 6 and verse 1. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. How was Israel going to learn what true good choices were if God just said, okay, whatever, and ignored it, and said, maybe they'll learn somehow? No, he knew they wouldn't. And so he allowed them to come under bondage. Bondage taught them to ask God, to call out to God once again, and ask for a deliverer. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 15. 1 Peter 4 and verse 15. But let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, or as a busybody in other men's matters. Yet if any man suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. Peter says, don't suffer for evil. Don't do evil so that you'll suffer. Learn to make a choice, a good choice. If a man steals and goes to prison, is it not his fault? If a man murders and is executed, is God to be blamed? Yet someone may argue God could have prevented the crime, hence the suffering. Not if he wanted to preserve man's freedom of choice. He could take away your freedom of choice, and you could be just this lump. You might as well be a block of sandstone for all the good that you would do. You don't have a choice to do good. Don't have to have a choice to be a hero in someone's life. You don't have a choice to take care of someone, to use your own will and do that which is good. How sad would our lives be if we didn't have any way to choose anything? God chose not to do that. Chose to give us choice so that we'll have those people to look up to. If Abraham didn't make his choices, where would we be? People like Jonah and David and many of the Old Testament saints didn't inspire us. If Jesus himself had no choice, where would we be? If the apostles didn't choose to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, where would we be? Personal wrong choices of others. We may suffer because someone else does something. Considerable amount of suffering is caused by the bad choices of our fellows. We cannot argue for our freedom of choice while denying it for everyone else. God is no respecter of persons. Acts 10, verse 34, Romans chapter 2, verse 11, these passages simply say that God is no respecter of persons. So innocent persons may be killed in a wreck involving a drunk driver. In times of war, many are killed as a consequence of the evil decisions of a few leaders. We sometimes pay the price for others' freedom of choice. That's going to happen. And God can't preserve our freedom of choice and take away those stings. If we are to reap the benefits of good labors of generations in the past, that is, scientific discoveries, we can avoid reaping the evils as well. Can we avoid reaping the evils as well? God warned that rejection of him would affect generations yet unborn. Exodus chapter 20, and the giving of the Ten Commandments, God reminded the nation of Israel and us by extension that choosing evil would cause evil things to happen for generations to come. Exodus 20, verses 5 and 6. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. You think about starvation in India. While there's food aplenty just wandering around on the hoof, and yet people simply won't leave their sacred cows behind and kill and eat. Because of the false doctrines of someone thousands of years ago, people can't eat. In connection with this point, we need to consider disease. First, disease is ultimately related to man's bad choices. That's sin. And it goes back to the Garden of Eden. When man made that bad choice, ultimately sin and disease came into the world. Before Adam and Eve's transgression, they were unaffected by disease. When they rebelled, they were deprived of the tree of life. Genesis 3, verses 22 and 23. And we are heirs of the conditions they introduced into the world. Romans 5, verse 12. Romans 5, verse 12. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. That doesn't mean you get the guilt of sin from Adam. It means there are effects of Adam's sin that are passed down. That death entered into the world because of that sin, and we are recipients of it all these generations later. Chapter 8, verses 20 through 25. Chapter 8, verses 20 through 25. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope. Because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, why doth he yet hope for? But if we hope for that we see not, then do we with patience wait for it. Certain things have happened to this world. The whole world groaneth, it says. There are things that have happened to this world because of sin. Certain things were done during the time of Noah's flood that we cannot count for otherwise. Many organisms, which are sometimes harmful, are also beneficial. For example, certain types of bacteria facilitate digestion or decomposition of waste materials. Were it not for the bacteria, this whole earth would be a stinking lump. We could not stand it. And yet, if you get into some of that bacteria, you could die from it. What about the natural disasters of our day? What causes these disasters? The drastically different geophysical features of the planet, mountain ranges, deserts, varying pressure areas. What created these varying conditions? Many scholars believe it was a universal flood, and you can read about that in Genesis 6, verses 5 through 7. Human wickedness, though, was the cause. All these things happened. Everything was perfect before, but God opened the fountains of the deep and released the windows of heaven. Our world of natural law. We live in a world that is regulated by natural law. I can recall back in my youth, both of my sisters had friends that went to high school with them that were killed by trains. You know, things like inertia and what a larger object will do to a smaller object. These things are laws of nature that you cannot deny. If you step in front of the train, it's going to cream you. That's just a fact. If you step off the edge of the Grand Canyon, it's a mile down there. You're going to fall, and you're not going to get up. That's just the fact of the matter. Do you actually want God to take away those laws? Say He did right now. No more gravity. No more inertia. No more anything. It's like we're in space. As you start to float away, you'll be asking God, please bring those things back right now. That which blesses us every day also is a source of our suffering. We are in a physical body and are subject to these physical things. We're victims of natural law. We benefit greatly from natural law, but if we violate this law, we will suffer. The benefits of suffering. Suppose your clothes were caught on fire. Suffering tells you something. Get out of those clothes and do it now. I remember one time I was out on the tractor shredding in Grandpa's pasture. And I had put gas in that old 8N Ford, and I had splashed some on me. And I started to burn through my shirt. And I had to do something about it. And the burning told me that I had to do something before I had to go to the doctor. Pain causes us to do things beneficial when we are about to be hurt. It causes us to avoid those things that will hurt us. You go by a stove and you place your hand on it. Now, electric stoves these days don't have the flames, and sometimes you don't know what's been cooking on the stove. You come in from outside and you don't know what's happened, but if you've been close to the stove before, you'll know to put your hand over it just a few inches high so to know whether it's hot or not before you place your hand down on it. Pain causes us to learn things. Pain helps us to develop noble character. Without pain, where would traits like patience and bravery and courage be cultivated? Simply wouldn't exist. Then there are spiritual things that happen for us. Let's note a few passages. 2 Chronicles 33, please. 2 Chronicles 33. Verses 10 through 12. And the Lord spake to Manasseh and to his people, but they would not hearken. Wherefore the Lord brought upon them the captains of the host of the king of Assyria, which took Manasseh among the thorns and bound him with fetters and carried him to Babylon. I don't know if you know about Manasseh, but he was the worst king for several reasons. It said that blood ran in the city of Jerusalem during his reign, and he reigned for a long time, so that there was never someone so evil as him for such a long period of time. He had to be taught. And the Assyrians were the rod of anger in God's right hand in order to get the job done. They bound him and took him among the thorns and carried him to Babylon. And when he was in affliction, he besought the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers and prayed unto him. And he was entreated of him and heard his supplication and brought him again to Jerusalem into his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord, he was God. Can you imagine that? Someone that evil for that number of years. Maybe 60 years, I forget the exact number, that he was king in Judah. But after that long of a period of time, God was able to punish him to the point that he asked to be blessed by God. Psalm 119, verses 67 and 71. Psalm 119, verses 67 and 71. Before I was afflicted, I went astray, But now I have kept thy word. Verse 71. It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. I wondered if you have added suffering to the meaning of this passage. Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. How many of Jesus' apostles died a natural, safe death in their homes as they were just breathing their last, comfortable around their family? Don't know of any of them that did. The first one that died was beheaded. And if we believe traditions, the last one that died had also defied death when he was boiled in oil. I don't know how long he lived in pain, but they all had certain persecutions that they lived through. In the midst of suffering, we must realize there is a place. Job chapter 3, verse 17. Job chapter 3, verse 17. Here Job says, there the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest. Eternity's coming. And how we've made our judgments, how we've made our choices, will regulate what we do in that eternity. What should our attitude be towards suffering? Many people right now are thinking about people that are hurting right now. And it's just too bad. That is, we can't stand that somebody's hurting that bad. But, you know, in the past, we've all gone through it. If you've lived long enough on this earth, you know people that have died. Someone that died hurting terribly. I can tell you some things. My brother was a victim of leukemia. And he took a cure that was supposed to put him in remission, bone marrow transplant. I am not his natural brother, so I couldn't give. But they found a donor that was pretty close as a non-familial match that they could find, that they had ever found, they said. They gave him that bone marrow, and it started to make cells that recognized him as the enemy, recognized him as something to reject, and it started to eat him from inside out. Yes, I know these are horrible things. You don't want to think about that. We want to all be comfortable, but we're trying to figure out how we deal with evil, pain, and suffering. My brother changed. My brother changed from someone who was selfish every day, all day long. It took him a while. Because he had people care for him. People had who he had harmed were caring for him. He changed from someone who thought only of himself to someone who thought of others. Now, when he died, he was almost unrecognizable because of the attack on his body of that bone marrow. In fact, that's what killed him, not the leukemia. But that change was, eternally speaking, worth it. I know it was horrible. Horrible for him, horrible for my parents who watched him every day. But that change was something to see. What should our attitude be towards suffering? Notice with me Acts chapter 5, verse 41. Acts chapter 5, verse 41. For Christians, we're going to suffer some. It may be a lot like those in the first century who were fighting against the religious power of their days. It may be like us. We have a few problems sometimes, but we don't. We're not suffering unto death. But it could happen any time. Someone could walk in here and bring an automatic weapon and tell us, curse God or die. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but it could happen to us, and it's going to count on whether we have made a decision, the right decision for our lives or not. Acts chapter 5, verse 41. They departed from the presence of the council. This was the Sanhedrin, the same body of people that had murdered the Son of God. These were the apostles, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for his name. Where would we be without this suffering? It motivated them. They went forward and prayed and asked for boldness, and with boldness went from nation to nation, preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Suffering changes people. Suffering does things for you. Can you imagine the apostles without suffering? Can you imagine Moses without being in the wilderness? Can you imagine Abraham without being commanded by God, take your only son to a place where I will show you and sacrifice him to me? He doesn't have the character without the suffering. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 19 through 23. By the time of this writing, Peter is an old veteran, someone grizzled, looking back to the past at the things that he has seen and heard. He has seen Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. He has seen the crucifixion. He has seen his fellow Christians being murdered because of their faith. He's seen them go on to preach the gospel in every nation. 1 Peter 2, verses 19 through 23. For this is thankworthy, if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. For what glory is it, if when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently? But if when ye do well and suffer for it, ye take it patiently, this is acceptable unto God. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps. I'm not telling you to go out and challenge people to the point where they're so fed up with you that they beat you. No, but some will suffer because of their faith. You'll lose a job, you'll lose a friend, you'll lose your family, you'll lose money, you'll lose your comfort, many, many things. But if it's for the right reason, there's a glory in that. Suffering is a small thing when compared to heaven. The results of handling suffering properly. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 12. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 12. If we suffer, we shall also reign with him. If we deny him, he also will deny us. Suffering is something that if we're Christians, we're going to have to go through. If we step off of a cliff, we're going to suffer going down. It's just bound to happen. If you're face to face with a semi going down an interstate or a highway, and you meet in the middle, you're going to suffer rather briefly, but you're going to suffer. There may be many reasons. My wife ran into the cat the other day. She pulled her hamstring or something in the back of her leg. Because of gravity. If there had been no gravity, she wouldn't have suffered. But we count on gravity. But if we suffer properly, we will receive a crown of life. James chapter 1, verse 12. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. Some people look at pain and suffering and say, God is not there. Or they say, God is not good. That God is in actuality evil. They are not going to be blessed. They have reasoned wrongly. They may believe that they are right, but they're not. This day, you may have a choice to make. I don't know each and every one of your lives. I don't know what you're going through. I don't know I know some of what you're going through, but we look at the life of Job, who suffered so much. We look at so many who met terrible ends. We see the prophets that preached to the nations and yet were treated poorly. We look at Jesus, who was before the high council of that which should have been the representatives of God, and they crucified him for being good and right. It happens, and we're going to have to accept it, acknowledging that God is right, and that we don't know everything, and that we'll just trust him. As Job said, even though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. If we can assist you in your obedience this evening, if you need to be baptized for the remission of your sins, or if you need to make a new start because sin has gotten into your life, we can help you. We can pray for you. We can assist you in your obedience. If we can do that, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?